Hey, everybody. Vaccine thought crimes, the things you are not allowed to talk about when it comes to the vaccine. What is a spike protein? Well, we go to the man who invented the technology behind the mRNA vaccine, Dr. Robert Malone. You're going to love this conversation. Send it to all your pro-vaccine friends and say, so what do you got now? Because Dr. Malone is as credentialed as you can find an expert. It's really incredible. If you want to support our show, you could do so at charliekirk.com/support, where you can become a partner with us in publishing 2 podcasts a day in our mission to reach millions of people every single month. charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, you can start a high school or college chapter at tpusa.com. If you want to come to America Fest, December 18, 19, 2021. By the way, you should be coming to America Fest. Kaylee McEnany, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Greg Gutfeld, so many other speakers. tpusa.com/amfest. Get your tickets today, December 18, 19, 2021 in Phoenix, Arizona. It's going to be amazing. Text this episode to your friends. Share this episode to all of your friends. It's super important that people learn the truth about what's happening with the vaccine. Dr. Malone is here. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. I am thrilled and, in fact, honored to have with us today Dr. Robert W. Malone, who is the Chief Medical and Regulatory Officer of the Unity Project, which can be found at unityprojectonline.com. You can find him on Twitter, unless they kick him off, at R.W. Malone, M.D. And you could also check out another organization he's involved with, globalcovidsummit.org. And he is the president of the International Alliance of Physicians and Scientists. Dr. Malone, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for the opportunity to be here and talk to you and your audience. So let's get on it.
So I'm an admirer and fan of yours. I first was made aware of you and your work when you joined Brett Weinstein on his podcast all the way back in April or May or June, if I remember correctly.
Back in the 20th century.
Yeah.
It feels like.
that was a different world. And I was very interested in that conversation, and I've watched hours of your footage since, because it seemed that you were confirming some of the suspicion that I had and skepticism I had towards the current rollout and the vaccine that we are now being, you know, in some ways forced to take. Please establish your background in vaccine technology, the original inventor of mRNA and DNA vaccines, and talk about why and how you got concerned about this, and we'll go from there.
Let's see. So briefly, the bona fides. UC Davis Biochemistry, Bachelor's in Science. UC San Diego and the Salk Institute, Master's in Biology. MD from Northwestern University in Chicago. Fellowships. Research fellowships at UC Davis and a postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard Medical School for Global Clinical Scholars Research Training. That was just a few years ago to kind of tighten up all of my credentials having to do with clinical research, regulatory affairs, and all that stuff. Also completed a medical internship at UC Davis. I'm a licensed physician in the state of Maryland. I did invent the core platform technology that gave rise to these vaccines. I did not invent these vaccines. And I'm a little aggravated at what's been done with these vaccines and what's happened to the technology. But I had I've had an extensive academic career, taught pathology at UC Davis and New Maryland, Baltimore, and also was an associate professor at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. You can look up all the papers and the many patents if you look on Google Scholar. Is a site, so you can just Google Scholar, and I'm having trouble with that, just like you were with the mRNA, with my name on it, and you'll see the over 100 papers and 12,600 plus academic citations for the work, blah blah blah, and then I'm basically a vaccine developer specialist times 30 years. I had a stupid amount of training in this and deep experience in my, what's a little odd about me is my experience cuts across small biotech, big pharma, U.S. government, particularly the Department of Defense and the NIAID. I've won over $8 billion, won or managed over $8 billion in grants and contracts relating to biodefense and vaccine development with the NIH and with the Department of Defense. I still work closely with the Department of Defense. We have three clinical trials about to launch. I support vaccine developers. I'm supporting a developer that's building a second generation vaccine for this disease. I was really a key leader in bringing forward the Ebola vaccine that we now call the Merck Ebola vaccine. I actually got Merck involved in that project. I've worked on many, many different vaccines and biodefense products, drug repurposing, particularly for Zika, and now for this particular outbreak. I'm kind of a independent consultant, but very much insider, particularly with the government. And what led me to this point was this really a series of odd events, of which the Dark Horse podcast is one. I really never understood the power of the podcast until that happened, and my Twitter account exploded. And as I like to say, yeah, it did. It's north of 450,000 now.
Wow.
And and everything gets blasted out over Telegraph and everything else and retweeted, and it's an odd thing. And what really kicked it off was I got really unhappy, uncomfortable with what was going on with the mandates, as well as the rushed aspect of the vaccine development. And I knew that a lot of rules were being broken, fundamental rules of bioethics, and fundamental rules of how products are supposed to be developed, vaccine products, et cetera, to ensure safety. I have deep background in regulatory affairs, and I know the way things are supposed to go. And they just broke all the rules, and then were misrepresenting information about it. Back then, my wife and I published a book on how to prepare yourself for the novel coronavirus in February of 2020. And
wow.
That book got censored by Amazon. It got taken down. It was about a couple hundred pages, all highly referenced, et cetera. We worked our cans off, especially my wife, Dr. Jill Glasspool, wanted to put it out. And then it got taken down. I think our sin was that we advocated for mask use at that time, which is a paradox. We flip-flopped. Now we don't think that the data supporting masks makes a whole lot of sense, especially these masks. But at the time, you'll remember that Dr. Fauci and the official government position was that you shouldn't use masks. And I think in retrospect, looking over that book, that was our only major sin, was bucking the narrative on mask use. So my point is, I've been well familiar with the censorship since the very beginning of this thing. But the depth and breadth of the censorship and propaganda that I've seen and many of my peers have seen still amazes me. Even, you know, I'm a pretty cynical guy these days, but it's profound. And I think we are in a situation that certainly I've never seen before. And I'm a veteran of many, many outbreaks. I've spoken at the WHO, et cetera. I've never seen anything like this coordinated all over the world. And I get the same reaction from my peers. This is highly, highly unusual what we're seeing. It is clearly coordinated. It involves big tech, pharma, government, the legacy media are all colluding. I don't know another way to put it. And it is truly become a threat to democracy as we know it and the rights of individuals to choose. I mean, that's what it comes down to, I think, at this point in my mind, is we're in a situation where we can accept totalitarianism or we can fight for the rights of individuals to make their own decisions, the right to choose. And I think it's way bigger than the vaccine now.
Oh, I totally agree
with
that.
It's down to freedom to choose.
Did you know that if you shop at Nike, they turn around and give your hard-earned dollars to pro-abortion groups like Planned Parenthood and the Population Council? Did you know that Airbnb gave $500,000 to the Marxist Black Lives Matter organization? Your first vote is at the ballot box, but that isn't enough to defend our traditional Judeo-Christian values. Left-wing corporations are subverting our democracy by taking money from conservative customers and giving it to radical organizations that support abortion, gun control, and critical race theory. You have another vote, a second vote, at the checkout line, and that is where massively important organizations called Second Vote come in. The courageous people at Second Vote are exposing corporations for how they spend your money. Check out secondvote.com today. Second Vote is developing incredible tools and engaging the smartest minds in the country to help inform Americans' purchasing decisions. What if I told you Chick-fil-A is not all that you might think it is? Well, their work is arduous, complex, and exhaustive. It doesn't happen for free. Please support their work so we can defend our future from the woke Marxist mob. So here's what I want you to do. Go right now to secondvote.com and subscribe. It's just $50 a year. But if you use promo code Charlie, you get 50% off. It's literally $2 a month, everybody. And you get 50% off the information you need to have before you make your next purchase. Do not buy products from people that hate you. Don't buy products from people that are funding the downfall of America. Join me, go to secondvote.com, and subscribe with promo code Charlie today. I want to read one of your quotes here for the audience. The government is not being transparent with us about what the risks of the vaccine are. And so I want to focus on that quote. But I also want you to explain to our audience what is, and I'm going to hopefully get this right, mRNA. What is an mRNA vaccine? What is the technology? And what is a spike protein?
And let's do that all in 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So you could take as much. The beauty of the podcast, Doctor, is you could take as long as you want. So,
yeah. And I have on many occasions. I tend to get a little long-winded on this topic. And you and probably hopefully many of your viewers have seen some of those other podcasts. So I'm going to try to go quick. The central dogma of biology is that DNA makes RNA, RNA makes protein. Now let's talk about this scary word mRNA, this acronym. What does that mean? Okay. There are many different kinds of RNA. What is RNA? It's a great big long molecule. You can think of it as like pearls on a pearl necklace. And each pearl is a different letter, but there's only four letters. Just like with your computer, there's only two zeros and ones. With the sequence that biology has selected or has been created, depending on how you see the world, there are four bases. There are four chemical entities in DNA, those are ATGC, and RNA, they're AUGC. So U and T are kind of interchangeable. And so it's a four base code in a long string that's negatively charged. And there are many different types of RNA. there is RNA that's used to shuttle amino acids to the little biorobot that does the manufacturing. That's called transfer RNA. There's RNA that is the scaffold that built that about which the little biorobots that manufacture proteins are built. Okay. And that's called ribosomal RNA. And then there's RNA that confers information from the DNA in the nucleus out to those little biorobots that manufacture proteins. And that's called a message. And so it's a messenger RNA or mRNA. What is RNA? The acronym is ribonucleic acid, RNA. That's where that comes from. And so it may sound spooky and scary and very different. It's really dead easy. It's messenger ribonucleic acid. It's just an acronym for that. Okay, so now let's talk about the vaccines. So you can, traditional vaccines come in kind of two flavors. One is a live attenuated virus. Polio is an example of that, polio vaccine. What is a live attenuated virus? Well, if you can think, everybody knows about gain of function. A attenuated virus is a loss of function. It's you've tweaked the virus in some way genetically or through passaging it, like you would breed dogs over many years, right? Or breed corn or whatever. So passaging it, you can generate viruses that have defects that make it so they don't replicate very well, but they still replicate a little bit. Or you can do that through fancy genetic engineering, like the kind of stuff that they probably did for the gain of function research, just to say. Okay, so you can make live attenuated viruses. Attenuated means they don't replicate as well. One example of that that you probably know about is flu mist. That's a live attenuated, cold adapted influenza virus that only grows in your nose because the temperature in your nose is lower than the temperature in your body. So yellow fever is another one, and the smallpox vaccine was another one. So there are various forms of these live attenuated viruses that people have been taking literally for centuries. And they work really good, but sometimes they can produce disease. For instance, if you have the yellow fever vaccine is a nasty piece of work. And if you take it twice without any gaps, it can kill you because you basically get yellow fever. So you have to just take just the right amount of this stuff. That's one form of traditional vaccine. Another form of traditional vaccine is basically like you take a flu virus and you kill it, and then you either purify it as killed virus using chemical killing, or there's other methods, or you blow it apart with detergents and purify all the subunits and get those as a really pure mixture. You mix it in with something called an adjuvant, an immunostimulatory thing like alum, and you jab that in your arm. And you generate an immune response against that. That's your flu vaccines, for example. So those are kind of two general categories. mRNA and DNA vaccines and adenoviral vectored vaccines, which is in a sense a form of a DNA vaccine, are all ways of taking genetic material that can be produced in a test tube and putting it directly into your cells. And your cells become the manufacturing factory. Okay, so instead of having a stainless steel bioreactor like you would brew beer in, and it's literally like you would brew beer in, that's a good metaphor. And there's more recent versions that are plastic bags that shake and rock and stuff like that. But basically, it's like growing yeast to ferment beer. Okay, you can use that technology to produce DNA or RNA or protein from cells. Or you can make them synthetically, the DNA or the RNA, and put it into your body in such a way that it'll go into your cells and your cells become the manufacturing factories. The adenovirus vectors like J&J and Sanofi is not in the States, are cold viruses, double-stranded DNA cold viruses. And they've had part of their genetic guts taken out so they don't replicate. And instead, you swap in the genes for whatever it is that you want to make protein for, whatever antigen, whatever protein. And so you can put the spike protein sequence into a cold virus, an adenovirus, and use that to infect you. Take the jab and you get infected with that. That tech is really good for long-term, high-level expression of proteins. It was just designed for gene therapy. So that's the J&J vaccine. Is that a traditional vaccine? The answer is no, it's not. Are there previously licensed vaccines using adenovirus vectors? Yes, but they've never been widely deployed like these are. Okay, so it is an experimental technology, the J&J product, but not as experimental as the mRNA. The mRNA takes, remember I talked about that, it's like a string of pearls, and the string of pearls has information, and the information tells these little biorobots called ribosomes how to make proteins. And in the case of these mRNA vaccines, that string of pearls, it will tell the little biorobots to make the spike protein. We'll go into that in a minute. You asked that question, what is spike? Okay, so the mRNA codes is prepared in a test tube. It's in some cases, it has synthetic bases instead of the U's. Remember I said uracil is in RNA. So those are pseudouridines. So those are fully synthetic, not normal bases in your body. So you can produce that thing in various chemical processes and purify it, and then you coat it with a layer of a special fat and add some other things so that those particles don't glom onto each other. And one of those things is polyethylene glycol. So that's why the PEG is in there, to keep these little particles of RNA wrapped in fats from sticking to each other and making great big particles that can cause problems. And the fats that wrap around the RNA have been specially engineered so that the RNA fat complexes will stick to the surface of your cells and will slip through your cell membranes, releasing the RNA that can go straight to the ribosomes and start making protein straight to those little factories. So I hope that's the whirlwind tour. But to try to demystify RNA vaccines, it may sound all very high tech. The honest truth is it's not so much. There's some, you know, it's a lot like cooking, and there's some special recipes to make it work. But once you know how to cook, then it's not very mysterious at all. Hope that helps.
I want to tell you guys about Good Ranchers, okay? You've heard me talk about it a lot. Look, Good Ranchers, they achieve the trifecta. The trifecta is very simple. One, everyone has to eat. Two, you love the country. Three, you want to support the Charlie Kirk Show. So Good Ranchers, they send you boxes of meat. When we get a box of meat from Good Ranchers, it's bedlam. People fight over the meat. It is the closest thing to Christmas morning I've ever seen with adults. And Good Ranchers has a limited time offer for all of our listeners. 10 free bistro fillets when you enter promo code Charlie at checkout. If you go to goodranchers.com/Charlie right now, this is a $100 value free with promo code Charlie. I want you to imagine over 100,000 Americans losing their jobs. So you could stop imagining because it's a reality. Since 2015, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches in the United States have shut down. Why? Because foreign meat is stealing their business and robbing you the quality and flavor you deserve. That's why Good Ranchers is here. They exist to support local American farms to help you make great American meals. Together, they want to restore the American ranch and your meals to their former glory. Get the beef, chicken, and seafood that can't be imported or matched at GoodRanchers.com. Did you know the product made in the USA has been stolen by foreign countries or product of the USA? They process their meat here, and then they fraudulently label it as if it came here from America. Good Ranchers is here to put America first at the dinner table and the farmers that work to raise the meat we eat. So do me a favor. Get a box of Good Ranchers. It supports the country. It supports the show. And everyone listening to this has to eat. Go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie right now and get 10 free bistro fillets. And in addition, when you subscribe, you'll save a $25 off each subscription box of mouth-watering American meats for life. These boxes will show up on schedule right to your door. That's right. Get 10 free bistro fillets, $100 value, free express shipping, and a $25 of your monthly subscription for life. GoodRanchers.com/Charlie. Go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie or use code Charlie at checkout. That's 10 free bistro fillets, free express shipping, $25 of your monthly subscription for life at GoodRanchers.com/Charlie. Some people are afraid that a spike protein could then cause other issues beyond just the vaccine, right? So
So let's talk about spike.
Yeah, so talk about what that is and why that's somewhat unusual to have involved in a vaccine.
So it's actually, what is spike? If you look at a coronavirus picture, we've all seen them because the media is constantly blasting us with all the fear, right? And so you see a sphere, and it's got little knobs sticking out of it.
Yep.
Those little knobs stick out like that so that they can basically grab on to certain proteins on the surface of cells. That makes sense. They're like a, you could think of them as a bunch of fish hooks all over the outside of the virus. These fish hooks, remember we have a fish hook that's just a single hook, and then we have treble hooks, right? You familiar with treble hooks? Sometimes you use those for bass and things like that. So that's the hook that has three different tines on it. And the reason why I say those treble hooks is because spike exists as three subunits that wrap, that connect to each other. And you can kind of think of each of those subunits as having something like a little catcher's glove that sits out above them. A catcher's glove, let's say fielder's glove is a better metaphor, okay? Fielder's glove has got a pocket in it for the ball, okay? That is the receptor binding domain. Those things, just like a good fielder with a good wrist, they move around in space. So there's three of these things, and they form kind of a tube. And I could show you pictures, but we're not doing that right now. We're not doing the slide thing. But they form sort of a tube that goes from the virus out to the surface. And basically, they're like a syringe. Okay? They're a tube. They form a tube. These three things coming together in this treble hook. And each of them has got a fielder's glove sitting on top. That's the receptor binding domain. Looking for a thing to grab onto. And they form a tube. What's that tube for? Well, what happens is that when spike identifies on the surface of a virus, identifies the ACE2 receptor, the little protein on your cells that it binds to, but those catcher gloves are engineered so they will just attach to that one protein for the most part. Okay, as soon as it finds one of those things and those catcher gloves glom onto that, it undergoes a change. And it's like somebody pushed the back end of a syringe, plunger on a syringe. What is it squirting? And the spike assembly is the needle. So these things grab onto your cell, they pull the virus close to the cell, and then they literally inject the RNA from the virus into your cell. That's how spike works. Okay, pretty cool. It all, you know, it's intense, little molecular, teeny tiny stuff, but that's how it works. That's what spike is basically a biologic syringe that injects things from the, injects the RNA of the virus into your cells, and that's how the virus infects your cells. So it turns out that isn't the only thing that spike does. Spike has a lot of different activities. And the fact that it binds to this ACE2 receptor controls a whole bunch of stuff in your body, like your blood pressure. It's one of the most important proteins in your body for regulating your general well-being, blood pressure and everything else. So spike also has this characteristic that it can cause cells to fuse. And we've learned they didn't really appreciate it back in the day when they designed these vaccines. Spike is toxic to cells, directly toxic. It does a lot of things. Now, the case is made, the fact checkers will attack saying, well, this isn't the wild type spike. Yes, the wild type spike that's on a virus is toxic, but nobody's shown that this engineered spike that has only two amino acid mutations in the whole thing, okay, and they're in that catcher's glove part, not the main part of the protein. The fact checkers will say, ooh, you haven't proven that the spike on the vaccines is toxic. And so my response to that is, well, it's true. It hasn't been proven. And bad on the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA for not having tested that directly, because we should know that before we start jabbing these things into people. It's one of the big things that wasn't done. I think it was a rush. I think there's a whole lot of hubris going on. Sometimes people think that they're so smart that they can cut corners. In my experience, I've seen that from time to time. Maybe you have too. Mm-hmm. And that seems to have happened here. I can't come, you know, there was this an intentional tool to depopulate the world? I sure hope not. I think that more likely the explanation for a lot of this goofiness is a combination of arrogance, hubris, and groupthink, people not challenging each other and not doing it right when they were supposed to, not doing all the right tests, not testing, you know, where this thing goes, how long it produces protein, how much is being made, how long it lasts, all this stuff that normally I would have to do if I was developing a new product. For some reason, they gave Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J a great big pass on all this. So you can speculate as to what went on there. But that's how we got into this situation, is they kind of rushed this thing out. And now we have to live with the consequences. And it's become, no matter what the fact checkers say, the lovely thing about biology and medicine is that no matter how important you are, no matter what your credentials are, eventually the data will come out. And so I ended up, you know, saying on that famous Brett Weinstein podcast, spike is a toxin. Mm-hmm. And they jumped all over me for that. But in fact, the native spike protein is absolutely a toxin. It's unequivocal. And as time has gone by, even though the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA didn't do their job and test whether or not it's safe, it's pretty clear to everybody that it's not safe.
Yes.
So, you know, is this normal vaccine development behavior? No, it's not. Everything has been rushed, even though they deny that it was rushed. They say, oh, we cut no corners. Well, your audience is smart enough. You know, there are certain things that practical sense just can make it really hard to get away with a lie from time to time. You know, the saying, a lie told 1,000 times becomes the truth. In this case, the lies that this is all safe and fine, I think time has proven that's not the case. And yet they're still so caught up in defending the lie that they can't seem to admit the truth, but most of us can see it.
Are you worried about America's future? Times of trouble are full of reasons to despair. But those who built and have preserved our country did not despair. And if we are going to do our part, we need to draw on the books, the history, and the ideas that gave our forefathers and mothers strength and inspiration. Hillsdale College, the beacon of the North, the last college, was founded in 1844 to teach all of these things, and it teaches them still today. The great news is that we can study all these things, along with Hillsdale College professors, right in our homes. I take the Hillsdale online courses, and in fact, I'm going to go to Hillsdale right now, to charlieforhillsdale.com. I'm going to show you directly how I'm doing with my online courses. and I'm going to tell you what courses I have finished, and you guys can do it alongside me. Boom, finish Introduction to Western Philosophy. Boom, finish Western Heritage. Boom, finish Intro to the Constitution. Boom, finish Constitution 101. Finish Winston Churchill and Statesmanship. I am starting and working my way through A Proper Understanding of K-12 Education in Theory and Practice. The Great American Story, A Land of Hope. That is a big lift, everybody. I encourage you to do it. Introduction to C.S. Lewis, Writings and Significance, The Presidency and the Constitution, The Genesis Story, Reading Biblical Narratives, and Civil Rights and American History. I'm working my way through all of them, but things that matter take work. And through Hillsdale's free online courses, we can study the history of our civilization, the wisdom of our ancient and Christian philosophers, the writings of Shakespeare and Mark Twain. We can reacquaint ourselves with our Constitution, and we can learn how the Constitution has been undermined, and more importantly, how it can be recovered. My friends, as we fight in the defense of family, faith, and freedom, let us draw on the best of the past with Hillsdale's guidance to save the greatest nation on earth. Begin learning today at charliefor.hillsdale.com. That's charliefor.hillsdale.com. Check it out today. Enroll for free. Just put your email, charliefor.hillsdale.com. So based on all the data you've seen and using your experience, and you might be the most qualified person to talk about this, how dangerous is this vaccine, truly?
So that is still a matter of considerable controversy. And you have to one of the problems is that there has been both intentional and unintentional censoring and editing and misrepresentation of the data on safety. Let's just call it what it is. It's propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, we cannot, and by the FDA's own admission, the systems that the CDC set up to monitor safety are inadequate. They said this flat out in the licensing letter for Comirnaty, the quote licensed vaccine that no one in the United States has ever seen. And there seems to be no intention in making it available. But with that, quote, license letter that the Biden administration put out, basically so they could justify jabbing the military personnel and the federal workers, there is a clear and explicit statement by the FDA that the CDC system, the BEAR system, and their other databases are inadequate to monitor safety. And so they explicitly told BioNTech/Pfizer that they were going to have to do prospective studies to monitor safety on three key areas: children, pediatric vaccines, safety in pregnancy, and birth defects. So when you hear the U.S. government saying, oh, it's all fine, you know, we know that it's safe and 100% safe and effective, that's when you know they're lying. That's just one example. And when they tell you that it's safe to use it in pregnancy, well, the answer to that is show me the data proving that it's safe in pregnancy. And the answer is they don't have it. So that's just another case of wishful thinking, I think, is the kindest way to put it. So spike is a toxin. I've explained what it is, what it does on the virus. It does circulate in your bloodstream after you have received the jab. It gets cut loose from the cells. Those data are clearly published in a paper that came out of Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital, and that was in a bunch of nurses. That was early on, and got a lot of people's attention. So spike circulates in your body, as do these complexes. And they go to various parts of your body. And are they toxin there? Do they affect it? Are they directly damaging your blood-brain barrier? Are they directly damaging your bone marrow? Are they directly damaging the ovaries of women? Remember, it's important. These lipids do go to the ovaries. They concentrate there to a remarkably high extent. Is that associated with changes in fertility and birth defects? We don't know because they didn't do the studies. That's the honest answer. But it's important to remember as we think about jabbing the kids, which is what's being pushed right now. Young girls have all of the eggs that they're ever going to have. They're born with them. Okay? It's not like sperm where you're continually regenerating more. In girls, that's it. That's, they get that shot and that's it. That's why they go through menopause, is they run out of eggs. So those eggs, if they're getting hit with catenic lipids, with these fats that coat the RNA, synthetic fats, at age 5 or 8 or 11 or 15, they're going to impact, if they have an impact, that impact is going to last the rest of the life of that young woman. So it seems kind of important that we ought to know about whether or not that's a problem before we start doing it. Now, I've given you a whole bunch of stuff there.
Well, yeah. So, and I want to be respectful of your time. So we have a couple minutes remaining, but if it's okay, I want to ask you two remaining questions, if that's okay. Well, we could do one if you're tight on time, because I know that you probably are stacked with.
I'm okay. It's up to you.
Yeah. So let's try to go 5 or 10 more minutes, because I have two important questions. So the first question I just want to reiterate is, based on what you're seeing through data and what you're seeing anecdotally and otherwise, are we seeing a correlation in two things, which is the more we vaccinate, are we also seeing a spike in COVID rates? Do you think that that argument could be tied together? And then secondarily, are we seeing a suspicious increase in other adverse events, such as increase of hospitalizations for non-COVID? Do you think the vaccine's playing into that, or do you not have enough data to come to that conclusion yet?
So I have to stay data-based, and as you've correctly identified two key hot issues, and one of them relates to vaccine-enhanced disease, mm-hmm. Something that the FDA has been concerned about. They call it antibody-dependent enhancement, which is one subset of vaccine-enhanced disease. And there's vaccine-enhanced disease of the SARS-CoV-2 infection, in other words, enhanced COVID. And then there is the potential effects on other things. And then there's the side effects of the jab, such as the myocarditis and the central nervous system, brain fog, and the autoimmune disease with Guillain-Barré, and the antiplatelet antibodies, and a bunch of other things, some of which we still don't know. And there is the reactivation of latent DNA viruses in your body, which is a common side effect. It's the second most common to the myocarditis. Why am I focusing on that reactivation of DNA viruses, like shingles, Epstein-Barr virus, mononucleosis, herpes, cytomegalovirus? It goes on and on. These are all DNA viruses that many of us carry. And they're kept in their box. They're kept suppressed by your T cells, which is one arm of your adaptive immune system. It seems that after taking the jab, there's some period of time where these viruses are escaping their usual immunosuppression, their usual being contained, pushed down by the T cells. Something is letting the top off the box and they're getting out. Okay. The evidence is increasingly that thing that's letting those viruses get out of the box is alterations in your T cell biology having to do with signaling molecules called toll-like receptors and the associated pathways. Okay. Why does that matter? Because the other thing that those T cells do, in addition to keeping DNA viruses in their box, is they suppress cancers. And so we're seeing a spike in uterine cancer and many other types of cancers that are unusual and unusually aggressive. That's worrisome. So we do seem to be seeing some unusual effects. Now, why would we care about this in the context of your question about other infections, other diseases? It seems that there's a period of time, we're not really sure how long, and it may be two different waves, where after you receive the vaccine, you are relatively immunosuppressed. That leads to two situations. If you're out in rural America like I am, where I live on a 45-acre horse farm, I don't see a whole lot of people from day to day. And the chance that I'm going to get encountering the virus after I've taken the jab is pretty low. If you live in Manhattan, where there's a whole lot of circulating virus and a really dense population of people, and you're walking on the sidewalk and you're running into people all the time, the chance that you're going to encounter virus is pretty high. So if you encounter virus while you're immunosuppressed, then you're in a better situation for getting disease,
wow,
not only from SARS-CoV-2, but from other viruses. So what are we seeing? These paradoxical surges in certain virus diseases like respiratory syncytial virus. Remember when the mainstream press was all, oh my God, all the kids are filling up all the hospitals. It wasn't so long ago, right? Oh, in the South, you know, it was all about the red states. The South is, you know, because they haven't been jabbed, they're filling up all the hospitals. Well, the truth is that all those kids had respiratory syncytial virus. There's something that was making them more susceptible to RSV, and the adults too. So there does seem to be something going on, we still don't got our hands on it, that is causing some immunosuppression, leading to a situation where people may be more susceptible to other pathogens, not just to SARS-CoV-2, during this period of immunosuppression. And we don't really know how long that is going on. And then we also have this emerging, you know, case reports from physicians and oncologists suggesting that they believe that they're seeing unusual cancers at unusual stages in life that are unusually aggressive. All this is a little bit worrisome. The hard part is to tear apart what is the effect of the virus and what's the effect of the vaccine, because we're all getting both things at the same time, or many of us are. And so it's hard to sort, you know, chicken from the egg here. And so I hope that's helped you, help to answer your question to the extent that I can.
Yes.
Do I think something's going on? Yeah, I think something's going on that's not right. Are we sure about what it is yet? No. Am I worried about it? Yeah, I've been concerned about enhanced disease from these vaccines from the outset.
So I have one final question, and that was very helpful. Thank you. The final question is this, is that you've been in this industry for decades. You are a data-first person. You have no bias. You have no political agenda. You have no motivation to go up against the pharmaceutical companies. You go where the data and where your reason leads you. Can you comment to our audience kind of how you are navigating all of a sudden being characterized as a villain because you dare ask questions? Just yourself personally, but also what is your how are you processing all of this that the most powerful institutions seem to be so against what is so obviously happening in real time? I'm not sure if this is making sense, but it's
totally making sense.
All right. Okay.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Please,
yeah,
please
so
go.
Just the recent example, Bobby Kennedy's book. Okay. It's now basically at the top of the bestsellers for Amazon. This is the book on Anthony Fauci. And this is an extensively researched book. Bobby just, you know, really worked super hard. And then I got to review it and edit it. And so did many others. Very, very well written, very well documented, footnoted. There is no major press reviewing the book. New York Times won't review it. Amazon won't let the publisher advertise it. They're carrying it, but they won't let him advertise it. Any attempts to talk about it are suppressed. It's not covered in any of the legacy media, okay? And yet it's obvious that it should be discussed. Robert is raising really substantial, well-documented concerns about corruption in the government, and yet we can't talk about it. That's just the most recent. Your audience will understand and remember all of this craziness about ivermectin being a
yes.
horse drug. I mean, if there was anything that was more, if your eyes weren't opened after that, then you're hypnotized. And I say that, you know, that's I don't just say that lightly. How do I deal with it? I'm a scientist. And I have often bucked the trend. I mean, the whole idea of RNA and DNA vaccines was heresy. You're right. So I have the benefit of 30 years of often being about 5 years ahead of my time, which is kind of a pain in the can, by the way. I hate it when venture capitalists come back to me and say, oh, I should have funded your company back then. It is really not very helpful. I don't want to hear those words. Okay. But I've had it a bunch of times in my life. I've been right again and again and again. And so it gives me confidence in my ability to think and see the data and make sense out of things. So that gives me a certain comfort, and it's my armor. In addition, frankly, I have a wife and coworker of over 40 years. I live on a small farm. I raise horses, and I kind of don't care. So when the Atlantic, writes their nasty little piece about me that was intended to take me down, and the fact checkers that have not even undergraduate degrees in biology write their little nasties, right? Because they're all paid to do this. I look at that and I say, well, that's fun. Let's go back and see how that stands the test of time in 6 months. And I think most of those things, if you go back and look at them, you're like, what?
Yep.
What he said was right. So that the metaphor of my armor, my sword and armor, my sword is my mind and my ability to perceive accurately. And my armor is the knowledge that I have friends, supporters. I've been through these things. I've been a heretic. I've been a whistleblower. And I've been right again and again and again, not that I'm always right. And I also have a lot of friends. And one of the things I've learned is that, yeah, these media outlets will attack you and they will do nasty stuff and say nasty stuff. Some of my physician buddies are always aghast at this. They still think the world is fair. I got over that a long time ago. Okay.
That's a very important point, though. That really is.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was a farmer and a carpenter before I was a physician and a scientist. Okay. I've been poor. There was a period of time where I lived off roadkill. It's not been an easy road for me and for my wife. And yet here we are. And that gives you a certain amount of confidence and faith in yourself. And I think that that's something we can all take away. And I think it's something that rural America really brings to the table here. And it just breaks my heart to see what's happened to small town USA with the rise of big ag and all that.
I agree.
But I think that the wisdom of the small farmer and the tradesman and the laborer is something that we should not forget. And I don't forget it. And I think this is one of the things I get a lot of feedback. It's constantly amazing to me. Why do people want to listen to me on podcasts? It is, I'm being sincere. What is it? And so I'm constantly saying, why do you want to talk to me? And, what is it you get out of this? What I hear back is that people really like that I don't talk down to them.
That's true.
And I try to make things understandable, and I don't judge them wherever they come from. And, I like to say, look, guys, I live in a purple state in a red county, and I run a small farm, and I got to get along with everybody. I got to get along with the tractor dealership. I got to get along with the guy that makes my alfalfa. And I also got to drive up the road to DC and deal with that whole kabuki theater. I live in a lot of different worlds, and I've found over time that your friends will sustain you. And I've had setbacks. I've been fired from jobs. And every time my friends help pick me up and they give me strength. And if that's something I can close on, you know, build community. That's what's gone wrong here. That's what's really gone wrong, is we are fundamentally sick as a culture because we've lost our connections with each other. And the folks that are picking our pocket right now and getting rich on us like it that way. They like us all divided against each other. And the more we play into that, the more they like it.
Well, I totally agree with
that. They're in a situation, we call it rent-seeking behavior. This is the new business model on Wall Street and in the big investment funds. They want things that gives them a monthly check. They want to pick our pocket not once. They want to pick it every month, or in the case of these vaccines, every 6 months.
That's right.
That is the honest truth.
That's right.
And so what we've got now is vaccines as rent-seeking behavior from big pharma and their corporate masters, which are these huge investment funds that also control the media and control big tech, and it goes on and on and on. And how we're going to break this stranglehold, I don't know, but it's not going to be done by people in Wall Street. It's got to be done by people that wake up and say, just like you said, you had that feeling early on, this isn't right. Something yes. here is not right. And when you have that feeling, I suggest you listen to it, because it's usually right.
it's instinct. Some would call it common sense. Dr. Malone, thank you so much for joining us. This was terrific. Thank you for all you're doing for truth and for reason. It's rare. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.